state to achieve personal freedom in all parts of your life. I'm Melinda Pillsbury Foster, your host for this hour of personal revolution, aimed at awakening the vision of America that nourishes the spirit within, connecting all of us and making sure we arrive at that destination. You can call us toll-free from the U.S. and Canada to 888-228-4494. You can call toll-free worldwide, 877-489-6350. Or you can call direct to Line 2 at 530-776-5154. In your local area, in your personal life, in every imaginable way, you are living on interlocking grids that suck you dry. You are working harder for less all the time, just like that old hamster in the corporate cage whose efforts enrich only those we never really see, except as images on television. Oh, it is ugly, and it is intentional. The first step in the revolution for yourself and everyone else is losing your illusions. Here, we give you the exits. This week, we'll be talking about one of the grids that is now in overdrive, the mortgage grid. When you realize just what they have been doing to you, well, you're going to be angrier than you perhaps imagined possible. Stay tuned to hear our guest, Bill Reynolds, a fascinating guy on that subject. Off the Grids is a show you need for your local area to hear so that you can organize for the local liberty phase of the Ron Paul revolution. Ron has committed himself to rolling back the Fed. But at the same time, we need to take back control at the local level, and that will be another related revolution. So help us help you. Ask your local station to stream us into your local area, and to do that, contact us at bbsradio.com. Also be looking for our up-and-coming website, offthegrids.us, which will be the always-available source for the ideas you hear here. All past shows become available as soon as is humanly possible on the station archives. My blog site is titled How the Neocon Stole Freedom and is conveniently located at howtheneoconstolefreedom.blogspot.com. Now, the story this week at the top is titled The Mortgage Mafia is Feeding on the Homes and Hopes of Americans. I guess you can't figure out what that's about. This gives you a tiny hint about what our show is about today. And I will leave that for our guest to enlarge on in a few minutes. You should naturally read the article. In addition to showing you the opening wedge of what's going on with the mortgage market, it also quotes that amazing American hero, Brigadier General Smedley Butler, a Marine who is one of the few people in history to have received the Congressional Medal of two Congressional Medals of Honor. In his book, War is a Racket, he is quoted as saying, and this surprised even me, I spent 33 years in the Marines, most of my time being a high-class muscle man for big business, for Wall Street, and the bankers. In short, I was a racketeer for capitalism. Wow. Smedley did not leave anything to doubt. The general was nothing, if not blunt. Butler was personally responsible for stopping the attempted military takeover of America's government in 1934. Among those responsible was Senator Prescott Bush, the grandfather of, surprise, George W. Bush. Clearly, W. is obsessed with finishing the job his grandfather started. Then, as today, the media was owned by the corporations. The investigation in Congress arising from the disclosure by General Butler was quashed. General Butler died in 1940, something we should all be very unhappy about. And this is especially poignant today because this show is occurring on the day that is often called the day that will live in infamy or the 66th anniversary of Pearl Harbor. Now think about that. Think about exactly what it means to live in a country where there are still so many unanswered questions about things that we think of as history. And now a few small news items, this one about an issue related to the housing market. House prices seen falling 30%. New York, Rutgers. Housing markets from Punta Gorda, Florida to Stockton, California will crash and suffer price drops of more than 30% before the housing crisis is over, a report from Moody's Economy.com said on Thursday. On a national level, the housing market recession will continue through early 2009, said the report, co-authored by Mike Zandi, chief economist, and Celia Chin, director of housing economics. The report paints a worsening picture for the hard-hit housing sector, which is in the midst of its worst downturn since World War II. While activity will stabilize in 2009, it will not be until 2010 before a measurable improvement in sales, construction, and pricing will emerge, the report said. House prices are forecast to fall 13% from their peak through early 2009. After accounting for incentives, the home sellers are offering buyers effective declines peak to trough will total well over 15%, the report said. Punta Gorda, Florida, and Stockton, California are the hardest hit markets in the U.S., with price declines from peak to trough forecast at 35.3% and 31.6%, respectively. This is the most severe housing recession since post-World War II period, Zandi told Rutgers. And now an update on the Ron Paul campaign. Now, if you never know where or when you're going to be to meet a Ron Paul supporter, and the Giuliani campaign found that out because they really are everywhere. One of the activists, curious about those corporate campaigns, went to a meeting of Giuliani activists and reported hearing the following that appeared nearly instantaneously on the Yahoo groups that allow such ease of communication for the Ron Paul world. Quote, the director said, with Ron Paul's success, we will be going into Florida without any wins, and Florida is going to be our last chance at the nomination. Ron Paul has a blimp, the crowd laughed. He's raised more money than us, and he's going to be the shock of the decade. They also said that they are almost sure Ron Paul will take New Hampshire, West Virginia, Nevada, Michigan, and California, unquote. And here is a comment by Ron Paul on House Bill 1955, one of the attempts by this administration to institute a fascist state. And you can sort of see why, given what is happening right now. Madam Speaker, I regret that I was unavoidably out of town on October 23, 2007, when a vote was taken on H.R. 1955, the Violent Radicalization and Homegrown Terrorism Prevention Act. Had I been able to vote, I would have voted against this misguided and dangerous piece of legislation. This legislation focuses the weight of the U.S. government inward toward its own citizens under the guise of protecting us against violent radicalization. I would like to note that this legislation was brought to the floor for a vote under suspension of regular order. These so-called suspension bills are meant to be non-controversial, thereby negating the need for the more complete and open debate allowed under regular order. It is difficult for me to believe that none of my colleagues in Congress view H.R. 1955 with its troubling civil liberties implications as non-controversial. There are many causes for concern in H.R. 1955. The legislation specifically singles out the Internet for facilitating violent radicalization, ideologically based violence, and the homegrown terrorism process in the United States. Such language may well be the first step toward U.S. government regulation of what we are allowed to access on the Internet. Are we, for our own good, to be subjected to the kind of governmental control of the Internet that we see in unfree societies? This bill certainly sets us on that course, unquote. Dr. Paul's remarks went on to outline the dangers of free speech to each of us as Americans. Do not think for a moment that they will not be trying to use the forms intended to provide security to all Americans to drive us with fear and control us for their own profit. However, they will fail. Not because they are not trying. They will fail because there is a spiritual revolution now ongoing, and that is a movement that is happening in each of us. And now on the grab of Ron Paul Liberty Dollars, this little update. Von Nauthaus, who previously ran the Hawaiian Mint in the 50th state and designed the Liberty Dollar program, is temporarily shut down from fulfilling orders for his firm's Liberty Dollars or even writing to customers, since computer records were seized too. The U.S. Mint website warns consumers that the use of gold and silver NorFed Liberty Dollar medallions as circulating money is a federal crime. Despite the raid and saber-rattling, a search of the federal PACER judicial database on November 26th disclosed that the only case involving Von Nauthaus is a civil one, and he is the plaintiff. In that suit brought in the U.S. District Court for the Northern District of Indiana, Evansville, Von Nauthaus sued Henry M. Paulson, Secretary of the Treasury, Alberto R. Gonzalez, former Attorney General of the United States, and Edmund C. Boy, Director of the Mint. Now, that really does make you wonder. But remember to order your chocolate Ron Paul Liberty Dollars. They are delicious and good for your internal economy. Paul beats McCain in Iowa. MSNBC, NW censors own poll. Now, this was posted December 7th, today, by Anti-War. The new USNBC Newsweek poll in Iowa puts Ron Paul at 8% of likely GOP caucus goers, 2 points above McCain. But both MSNBC and Newsweek, who commissioned the poll, have omitted Ron Paul from the analysis. Newsweek's article on the poll analyzes it with regard to the top candidates, including McCain, but omits any mention of Ron Paul, who beats McCain in their own numbers. Chris Matthews, who was the first to announce the results on MSNBC, displayed a chart. Huckabee, 39%, Romney, 17%, Thompson, 10%, Giuliani, 9%, and McCain, 6%, and then proceeded to talk about those five candidates, never mentioning Ron Paul's 8%. If Ron wins in Iowa, I wonder if they will leave his total off the results. That's the sort of thing you could expect, isn't it? And now some thoughts for the week ahead. Off the grids, as I have said before, is about much more than your electricity bill. It is a spiritual change, a completely different set of tools for getting along with each other and achieving our individual goals. Today, nasty behavior has triumphed, driving out simple decency and civility. But the baseline of the revolution is switching to the right tools and using the cultural tools available to us to enforce that use through disincentives for ugly, grubby behavior. Today, deceit, coercion, and violence are the tools of choice for the people of greed. In the time coming, those tools will be consensus and persuasion, and those will be our tools. Why should any of us be able to put a gun to someone's head and demand they do what will profit them? But that is what government does every day. That is what nearly all legislation is about. Being in community with each other is a change of the tools we use in our personal, civic, and professional relationships. We need to use persuasion, transparency, and awaken a continuing concern for the well-being of those around us. Government, politics, and business today is all too often predicated on the idea that lying, coercing others, and using force is just fine if it results in compliance and a profit. That has to change. At the same time, those who have engaged in that kind of behavior need to be confronted and understand the ugliness of what they have done. They need slapdown. Our subject for this show takes us to one of those cooperative efforts on the part of banking, monetary institutions, and government intended to bleed us dry. The mortgage market is a prime example of all that is wrong with those who have acted out of greed, using deceit, coercion, and, at the drop of a hat, violence to burnish their bottom line. Getting off the grids has been a long revolution. It begins with understanding, and those in power have worked mightily to insert disinformation, confuse the issues, divide us, and justify their ugly predatory behavior in any way possible. Right now, it probably seems like we're lost, but like so many things in life, that's an illusion. Now is the time that we are beginning to find our feet and notice the problems, and that is real progress. Climbing off the grids is sort of like going home. It will be a glorious journey that challenges and fulfills you. You can survive, even when that seems impossible. Our guest tonight is going to share with us some of the realities that are now hitting American families across the country. when that happens to you, you need to understand. Bill Reynolds has followed several professions in his life. He started out as an auditor in the hotel industry, working for a major hotel operator in Nevada. His auditing experience led him into the field of forensic accounting. His experience has proven quite interesting and useful as he has followed the developments in the mortgage and banking sectors over the last 3 or 4 years. Semi-retired and living in Southern California, where his wife works as a real estate broker. He has two large adult boys. Oldest son is a highly decorated 6'4", 220-pound officer in the Marine Corps, and the other is 6'2", 210, and works in the intelligence field, which we are not supposed to discuss. A few years ago, after retiring from his family's company, Bill was considering getting into the high-end real estate business with his wife in Southern California and was fortunate enough, or not, to have sat in on a real estate CE course dealing with mortgage fraud. This was a sort of turning point that allowed him to chart a completely new career path as a criminal investigator in the banking, mortgage fraud, forensics, accounting sector. Now working as a freelance private investigator analyst for several large banks, the government, and some large insurance underwriters, there's hardly an extra minute left in the day. His unique ability to identify fraud abnormalities has led him to identify a dynamic economic model that can be overlaid on virtually any forms of market exchange, which gives him a unique sort of profiling capability, allowing him to sort of sniff out corruption in virtually any dynamic market system or exchange system. He has some very interesting observations and insights that I think all of you will certainly appreciate. Bill describes himself as a cantankerous old coot with little patience for BS, and he despises phony politicians and our modern system of fraudulent voodoo economics, which he calls a house of cards built on quicksand. Having grown up in Texas, he pretty much calls him like he sees him. Please welcome William Reynolds. Bill, are you there?
Hi, Melinda.
I'm so glad that you could be with us today to discuss a subject that is of such grave concern for Americans.
Glad to be here.
So tell us more about how you stumbled upon our career in forensic accounting.
Well, you pretty well covered it. It was pretty much by accident. I sat in on a continuing education course with my wife, and realized pretty quickly that there was something going on that, you know, probably was happening all over the country, although the course instructor tended to sort of make it sound like it was a local problem.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I sort of developed this methodology of looking at this. My accounting background provides me with some interesting systems for checks and balances, and I've always had an uncanny ability to spot a liar. I learned that, you know, when it comes to money, if someone will steal a dime from you, they'll probably steal as much as you'll allow them to.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with this kind of money is when you're talking about, you know, $100,000, $200,000, $300,000 for a home, until it gets out of control and somebody needs to go to jail, the crime just continues to grow and grow.
Huh. So
the banking and finance industry is probably where it's banking, finance, and real estate industry is probably where it all, you know, is focused on, because it's full of assorted group of characters who all sort of cavort with lawyers, if you know what I mean.
Well, that's horrifying.
Yeah. My grandmother has a good way of summing that up, bless her soul. She used to say that when you sleep with dogs, you get fleas. And my perspective on that is we've got a flea infestation in this country right now, and it involves some of our favorite politicians and some of those not so favorite, some big campaign contributors, a few lobbyists here and there, some special interest groups, and a political action committee or two.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's certainly probably a minimum sort of thing you could say about it.
Yeah.
These guys
run organizations called self-regulatory organizations, or SROs.
So tell us about what an SRO really is.
I'm sorry.
It sounds so respectable.
SRO is sort of short for self-regulatory organization. There are a few industries that have these things, normally out of convenience more than, abiding by respectable ethical or moral procedures. But the founders of the U.S. Constitution kind of qualifies these guys as secret societies, people who kind of have their own code of conduct that operate differently from what we know as the law, kind of like lawyers and the Bar Association, or real estate brokers and the National Association of Realtors.
So you're saying all those things are actually sort of secret societies?
Well, they're not so secret because they're public organizations, but they all do have secret agendas, and they've got secret ties through political action and special interest groups that, you know, lobby our senators and congressmen in Washington to influence certain ways that things are investigated or regulated or handled. The Mortgage Brokers Association is another one. You know, as if protecting, you know, the Bar Association protecting lawyers wasn't bad enough, you've got the Federal Reserve Board, which controls almost all of the money in the country, with exception of the black market. And this is phony money, and no one's accountable, and no one can bring them to sort of account for things because they're a private organization for the most part of elite special interest groups and bankers. Yeah.
How? Well, and of course, you know, right now they're all sort of colluding to pump us dry.
Well, in more ways than you could possibly know, they operate outside the law. They're protected by the government. They hold secret meetings, kind of like OPEC does when it wants to manipulate the price of oil up, as I'm sure everybody's aware of. Have you ever tried to sue an attorney, Melinda?
Well, I've certainly had fantasies about doing that. I don't think I've actually done it yet, but I've certainly thought about it.
Well, how'd that go?
Well, of course, the system is completely corrupt. You know, they're the good old boys network, and they're not going to let you sue one of their buds.
Right. They're all kind of working to protect each other.
They just all get into a huddle and decide how they're going to screw you over. And then, of course, you've lost even more money. So that does make you start to think that the court system is corrupt. You know, it just suddenly starts to sink into one's thick skull. Yes.
Yeah.
So I have.
Well, Melinda, my mother's family immigrated from Sicily. And so I'm a Texas Italian.
Really?
Yeah. People who operate like this in Italy are, you know, it's called La Cosa Nostra. Elliot Ness coined the phrase the mob. Well, our government calls this sort of conduct organized crime. In fact, there's federal statutes on the books that deal with these sorts of criminal violations called the RICO Act. RICO is short for Racketeering, Influenced, and Corrupt Organizations. And government agencies, by the way, are not exempt from being charged with criminal offenses for these kinds of things. But do you think you could ever find a federal judge to prosecute a government agency, or much less a bunch of government politicians? It's absurd.
Well, probably not.
Now, these criminals have a protection racket so impenetrable that no citizen will ever see justice in a U.S. court regarding the true crimes that have gone on here. You probably have to take it to The Hague in the Netherlands to get any sort of justice on the matter. And then you'd have trouble probably subpoenaing them and having them show up because you wouldn't find anybody that would enforce the court's order.
Well, I think that actually recently happened to Rumsfeld. They were trying to grab him, and he beat feet so that they couldn't get him. And I imagine that's probably why the Bushes actually made sure that they own land in Paraguay where they don't have extradition.
I've heard about that, too, yeah.
Yeah. So racketeering is something that seems to be, from what you've said, and because of your forensics work, something that's sort of simply endemic in American government and business today.
Well, our lives have sort of been hijacked by organized crime, except it's not the kind of crime that you would think. It's racketeering, influence, and corrupt government organizations that, you know, we have to be worried about. We have a serious problem on our hands right now. We live in a in a time not unlike the tulip scandal in Holland during the 17th century, where someone got their hands on most of the supply of tulips in the world and created the world's first real monopoly.
Wait a minute, the first real monopoly was on tulips?
Yeah, tulip bulbs. Can you believe that?
That's amazing. Somebody should tell that story. That's great.
Yeah. Well, a different meeting, okay? But, you know, if you think about it for a minute, the same way that the prices of tulips were jacked up through wild speculation on the fact that, you know, nobody was ever going to have the ability to buy any tulips. And people didn't have a lot to do back during the 17th century. I don't know if you know that or not, but they didn't have the internet or cars or those kind
of
things.
They had other things to do.
Right.
They obviously had a lot of tulips.
The ever-increasing price escalation and speculation ushered in the collapse of the entire tulip industry. Well, that's sort of like the real estate and mortgage speculation we've seen over the last 15 years, where our government has worked very hard to create this sort of intangible economy. They've allowed people that couldn't qualify for a loan to purchase a home to, you know, find a way to qualify to buy that home. They figured out a way to prop up the sales price by ever increasing the prices of these homes. A couple of other things have been thrown in the mix, like, you know, a couple of natural disasters like Katrina. And, you know, when you start figuring out that the government has figured out a way to essentially create worthless paper to trade in these markets, all managed by the big hedge funds and the big mutual funds and the sieves and the, you know, the big banks are even buying into all this stuff. I don't know if you heard or not that Citigroup, you know, charged off like $2 or $3 billion worth of loans for like 20 cents on a dollar.
Yeah, absolutely. And now, who does that impact?
Well, you know, we don't have a gold standard anymore, and the Feds can print billions of worthless dollars. They can't even print them fast enough. In fact, I don't know if you heard the story about the truckloads of millions of dollars that disappeared in Iraq in dump trucks being thrown over the side trying to put currency back into the Iraqi economy.
What, say that again?
We don't even as a country, we don't even report on the M1 money supply anymore because the Feds don't want us citizens to know how much phony, worthless paper is floating around in the world economy.
Okay, tell everybody what an M1 money supply is.
Well, it's the thing that it's an index that tells you how much money is actually out in the economy. Our government sort of viewed the releasing of the M1 money supply as sort of a national security risk, so they stopped reporting it.
That's a national security risk? Maybe their security, not ours.
Well, I mean, you know, we're fighting an enemy that we haven't clearly defined yet, and we've suspended the writ of habeas corpus when it's constitutionally not supposed to be suspended, except for threat of national security. You know, the problem that we have is our citizens are not educated anymore. No one understands. No one knows the Constitution. They can sing every rap song that comes down the road, but you know they don't know the words to the Constitution or the Declaration of Independence.
Well, that's something they should certainly know. But why don't you tell us how these markets interrelate? And where the forensics come in. And what's this have to do with a person's home mortgage?
Okay, well, that's a good question. Keep it on point here. When you buy a home, what you're doing is you're actually agreeing under what's called an offer to purchase in a contract to buy somebody's house that's on the market and pay a certain price for it. Okay?
Uh-huh.
Well, that price is reflected by what that person feels like that house is worth. And that worth is determined by what the guy down the street or around the corner or two blocks over or whatever sold his house for just recently. So it's sort of like, you know, we need to get as much as the Joneses did for their house because they sold their house and ours is nicer than that. So there's this sort of ever-creasing bubble of value out there that's not based on anything that's real. It's just what somebody's willing to pay.
Uh-huh.
Now, what you do is you either pay for that house in cash, which less than about 1% of our homeowners in this country have done. Okay. We have in fact, if you look at the real numbers on this, it's completely frightening. and especially when you contrast it with like India or China or the rest of the world, where most of those places, they own 99% of the people own their homes without any debt on them at all. Okay.
And so they probably think we're weird and bizarre.
Well, especially when we'll work 20 or 30 years to pay this thing off so that we can put on this sort of air about we're successful. You know, we're financial slaves and don't know it, I guess is the way to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
If you put it into perspective here, America is sort of turned into the land of the fee and the home of the slave.
Well, that's an interesting way of putting it. I would say, yes. And
yeah.
So people, what you're saying is that people, they borrow money that continues, then they have to pay the huge interest on it over a long period of time, and it locks them into payments. And then if you pull back from that, from what you've just said.
Well, in the first 5 or 6, 7, 8 years, they don't pay a single dime hardly off on their mortgage. None of the principal's being paid back. It's all interest. Okay, so the
uh-huh.
only person that's making money is the banker.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there was a little program on the news the other night. They were talking about some Senate investigation committee on the House Finance Committee or something along those lines, where this lady in California had borrowed, bought a $2.3 million home or something along those lines, and had gotten an interest-only loan. Her mortgage payment was like $18,000-$20,000 a month, if my memory serves me correctly, and it only included interest.
Wait a minute. How much was the house worth?
With the recent declines in the housing market, about $1.5 million, $1.6 million.
And she was paying that much a month on it, and it was only interest?
Yeah. Now, if you put this into perspective, conveniently enough, you can realize that something's going on here, you know, and there are a few colloquialisms I could use to sort of express that, but I'm sure everybody's probably pretty well aware that, you know, something hadn't quite been adding up over the last few years. But, you know, to put it into perspective here, you buy something that's overpriced, you don't reduce the principal, which is your part of the investment in the property, for 5 to 7 years, and then it's only a few dollars. It's like 95-5 on the ratio of payments. The only time you start paying principal back is toward the end of the loan. Well, people don't even plan on owning the houses that long. That's the speculation.
Well, it's an artistic way of paying rent.
And they're glorified renters is what they are. They don't own anything. But yet, you know, we call it home ownership. It's this political doublespeak that we've come up with in recent years, you know, where our government uses words that sort of represent one thing while it's really something else.
Sort of like they do with freedom. When they say freedom,
exactly.
They mean slavery.
Right. Yeah.
And again, I mean, we've talked about this. People need to understand what the truth is, because until you get on the truth page, there's very little you can do to change things. You have to see what the game is, because you're saying that they've been playing sort of this, this game, you know, with us, where they never let us really see the little ball as it kind of flits around under the shells.
Yeah, it's a game of Monopoly is basically what it is, with phony money and phony houses and phony cars. And, you know, recently with the changes that we've seen in the bankruptcy law, you know, if you don't pay your mortgage payment, you're going to need a get-out-of-jail-free card, if you know what I mean.
Well, that makes it perfect, then. It's just like Monopoly.
Well, and that's basically where they've gotten their education from. They've been testing the waters with these little trial balloons, trying to figure out, you know, what we'll tolerate for the last 20, 30, 40, 50 years. And they're optimizing their economic strategies based upon when does the cringe factor kick in, and when are these citizens going to stand up and fight back?
Well, yes, and they're fighting back on something that really hits them close to, shall we say, home, because it is their home that they're having to fight for.
Well, and if you figure out that, let me ask you, and I'll bet, 95% of your listeners out there probably didn't really put any money down on their home, so to speak. Okay.
Really?
They probably got, you know, at the absolute most, probably a 80-20 loan or an 85, you know, 15 or a 90-10. Sometimes it's no money down, no documents, no credit reports, no nothing. I mean, there's special types of subprime mortgages you can get out there that don't require any information other than your signature on the bottom line. Now, you know, there's
used car salesmen into this. And that's to put them into this renting thing.
Yeah, to give them this thing that makes them want to. It's the old Pavlov dogs theory of economics. Okay, I call it voodoo economics, but that's probably too good a name for it. It probably, you know, needs to be called crack pipe economics if you really want to know the truth about it.
Uh huh.
But, you know, it's the type of thing where they make you think that getting your home paid off is, you know, something that's really important to you, and they want to create this thing, this goal, this carrot that you'll work day and night for trying to keep until you just can't keep up anymore and you're exhausted and you roll over tired and worn out, and then the mortgage guy comes in and forecloses on it and stole your work product.
Right. Well, and that's really very much like what happens. It's like that little rat in the cage or that little hamster in the cage. He keeps running and running and running, not realizing he's not getting any place.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a complete exercise in futility.
And this, of course, is not the only issue here, because they've figured out so many other layered ways of getting the money out of you and optimizing their bottom line.
Well, it's permeated our entire economy. Why do you think that? I mean, if you go to the FBI.gov website and just do a little research, you'll find that mortgage fraud cases are up like 500% in the last 10 years. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know,
they went and got those banks, huh?
Well, they're not going after the banks. They're going after the little small-time real estate people, the developers, and the homeowners, because they can get more. That's got more sizzle to it, and it doesn't upset or undermine the economy or cause the consumer to lose faith in the economy and stop playing their little game, their little monopoly game.
Uh-huh.
The Fed's not interested in prosecuting the real criminals. And there's two parts to this issue. There's public perception and private economic policy. And this kind of goes back to these Fed closed-door meetings and that sort of thing that I was telling you about, you know.
Yes. And so you're saying that it's almost like this play that they've put on it was a con game, and they've had people playing these parts and building this false picture for us so that we're trying to pay off this house that, of course, we're never going to be able to pay off, and the little cage is going faster and faster and faster, and at the same time, they're taking the money out of there. They didn't actually put any money in there.
Well,
so
that goes back
to
the
point. It's become like a perpetual generation machine for them.
It's fractional economics is what it is. They figured out how to turn a penny into $100 and rotate it and flip it and lend it out and, you know, do loan-to-reserve ratios with all the banks that they give money to where they can get more money if they lend more. And if they don't lend any, they don't get any more.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's the Feds controlling every facet of our life. You know, it's a monopoly game. We've been convinced that these things are real, and they're not. The only thing that's real is the car that you drive and whether it's actually paid for or not, the house that you live in and whether it's paid for or not, and, you know, that sort of thing. What's real is what you can feel and touch and what interacts with you on a daily basis, this stuff that you've got. If it's not paid for, it's this whole theory around investing. If you think back to the 50s or the 60s, no one took the stock market really seriously, especially after the crash of 29, because they sort of viewed it as gambling. Well, we've got major, you know, news channels devoted to the stock market today, trying to create this illusion of, you know, security and prosperity and all this sort of thing, and it's nothing but a mechanism, as the dot-com fallout showed us, a mechanism of taking our money and putting it in their pockets.
Uh-huh. And, well, you know, over the last year, right on my show, we've talked about hedge funds and limited liability partnerships like Blackstone Group and the fact that many insurance companies, mutual funds, and pension funds are actually investing in high-risk ventures. And this actually impacts the mortgage market, too, doesn't it?
Yeah, let me talk about that just a minute, okay? See, we've been sort of hoodwinked or, you know, been victims of the shill game. I don't know if you know what a shill game is or not, but
Oh, sure. For
your listeners, a shill game is something that requires more than just two parties. It doesn't have the con man and the victim. It has the con man, his assistant, and the victim. And so what happens is the assistant provides the air of credibility that the victim needs in order to buy into the con.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Well, that's what our government has been busy doing. They require that real estate agents and mortgage brokers and bankers and all these guys go to continuing education. Well, we know what the education system is designed for. It's sort of like a programming mechanism that's used to pre-program us so we don't question authority.
Well, it's okay. Also, it teaches them that these things that are entirely specious and non-existent are real.
Right.
So that they can get everybody to engage in that suspension of disbelief, then they can get everybody to believe that a mouse is a horse.
Right. Just because we said it is, and we can prove it because of the way, you know, DNA works or something along those lines. But, you know, what we're talking about here is we've created these we've bought into this world, and I'm telling you, you have to really separate yourself from it to understand it. But think of it like this. Used to, everything we owned was bought and paid for, and we had pride in that. Now, even the IRS has made it so that it's inviting, because we get tax deductions, to owe money on our home because we get to deduct the interest that we pay off of our tax returns, okay? So in a way, just like the bankruptcy laws being changed just in time for the mortgage collapse so people can't get out from under the liability that they owe on their home if they file bankruptcy.
That looks so intentional, doesn't it?
It's deliberate. I'm telling you. It was done behind closed doors, well thought out, and it's part of this closed-door secret society thing I'm telling you about, instead of government working publicly in front of everybody for all of us to see so we can intervene on it, they're
uh-huh.
doing it behind closed doors.
Yes. Yeah. And the whole thing is a con from beginning to end.
Yeah. Well, to stick with the point here about investing and home ownership and mortgages and so forth and so on, we've sort of been talked into retirement accounts. Think about what's going on with the IRAs, the traditional and the Roth IRAs. You know,
uh-huh.
they're vehicles that get us to put our money away for 20 or 30 or 40 years in some cases before we can get to it, okay, so that they can have a safe, secure, locked-up place where they can have funds that they know we're not going to go get because we'll have to pay an early withdrawal penalty, you know, a premature penalty for moving the money around, a surrender charge if it's in an annuity, all kinds of things to try to keep us where that money stays locked up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And the reason is because they're using this, you know, voodoo or crack pipe economics, playing with our money, trying to figure out how they can multiply it so that they can continue to grow this false economy. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
In the meantime, they got this other game going on called the investing world.
Yes.
Trying to convince you to put money in mutual funds and annuities and, you know, cash values in life insurance and all those kind of things, so that the people who manage those things can go out and take all the risk in the world with your money.
Yes, which okay? of course makes your money go away. At the same time, you still own the money on the house.
But the fraud here is that they call these little or no risk investments because they're managed accounts, okay, supposedly diversified, where you don't have any control of it, and try and go get the money. It's virtually
yes.
impossible to go get the money.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So it's a situation where they're playing both sides against the middle, and you're buying into their game, just left and right, buying into their game. What you ought to do is, instead of having one of those kind of accounts, pay your home mortgage off and get rid of your car loan, have everything that you own bought and paid for, burn your credit cards, and, you know, don't borrow anything from a bank unless you absolutely have to.
Mm-hmm.
But see, we're past all that.
Well, yes, I mean, we really are, because everybody, of course, climbed on that lifeboat or whatever you want to call it. It looked so good, so neat. Everybody was going to do it. Money was going to continue to be easy, and interest was going to be low, and everybody was going to be really sort of effectively wealthy. But what you're saying is that what they were trying to do was entice us into a scenario where we couldn't win and they could have all of our money.
Okay, well, let me give you another point. I guess you heard about President Bush yesterday announced that they were going to suspend or abate certain people who qualify for certain, you know, types of loans that were, you know, these subprime loans. And by the way, they're fairly hard to qualify. You know, not everybody fits into those areas. So it's kind of like you got to have one leg and, you know, come from an interracial family and, you know, that sort of, you know what I'm getting at.
But they're trying to make people feel better.
It's this false sense of security that they're trying to, you know, Uncle Sam is going to come take care of me.
Right.
Yeah. And it's done with, you know, premeditated intent to try and prop up the economy so that you know who can get out of office before it all hits the fan.
Yes, Mr. W.
Yeah.
He wants to get out. He wants to get to Paraguay before we figure out what happened and exact some justice.
Well, I got a good example for you here. Instead of them allowing these subprime mortgages to be sold for 20 cents on a dollar, how about just letting the people that own the houses buy their mortgages back for 20 cents on a dollar instead of finding somebody else, some other rich political, you know, constituent crony that they can, you know, line his wallets with by forcing you to pay all his money back.
And that's really a really great idea and a wonderful point. Why is it that they can discount that paper the way that they do and sell it, but you have no right to consent or decline what they do with the loan on your house that they entered into with you?
Well, and more importantly, going back to what I said earlier, there's all kinds of little badges of fraud associated with that. First of all, probably no money really changed hands between the buyer and the seller at closing. Okay, the money came from the bank, was given to the seller's mortgage company. You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
The buyer and seller weren't even really involved in the deal. There's oftentimes situations where the seller winds up writing a check for something he supposedly sold. Now, how screwy is that?
Yes.
You see what I'm saying?
Yes, I know exactly what you mean.
That violates every kind of principle of contract law you could ever imagine. So, you know, if you put this into perspective, you know, they really aren't, you know, properly negotiated, paid and satisfied types of monetary instruments in the first place. The whole thing, the whole situation is based on fraud.
Uh-huh.
But it's blessed by a bunch of lawyers, and the reason it's blessed by a bunch of lawyers is so that it can be propped up in the courts.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
And they get money for that. That's where they get their cut.
Right. So you think the court system is going to go against the big lending institutions that are backed by the full faith and credit of Uncle Sam?
Not for a moment.
Not for a moment.
And this is fascinating. Now, obviously, this has been done to the American people, and there needs to be an accounting. And you, of course, are a forensic accountant. What would you suggest right now that Americans should take a look at doing to make everything, to make it right?
Well, you know, there's lots of chatter about different things and so forth and so on. But I guess at the end of the day, you know, the only thing that you can say is if you can't afford the house, don't plan on making any money off of it. Try and sell it and get out of it and find something that you can't afford, you know,
mm-hmm.
and rent until you can afford to buy something, you know. People have been living well beyond their means. You know, we have economies go through cycles. It's inevitable, okay? What we have today is a sort of Hollywood mentality that causes us to want to keep up with the Joneses. Well, the Joneses don't own their home either.
Yeah, and I know. It's so true.
Yeah, they don't tell you when you're that when you're watching Life of the Rich and Famous and MTV's Cribs. Look
Amen.
At Michael Jackson and Britney Spears. You know, in 10 years, she'll be broke, too, if not
well,
sooner.
Well, she probably will, and, you know, that'll be too bad. Well, thank you so much for being with us today. This has been a real education, and I hope you'll come back and tell us some more about what we can do to, you know, to put Americans back in the driver's seat.
Thank you.
You take care. God bless.
Thank you. Bye.
And that's our show for today, Friday, December 7th, 2007. Making choices does change the future in tiny little incremental pieces. And you can change the world by the choices you make. So you remember what Bill said. One, buy a house you can afford or rent. And wait for more news about what you can do about your mortgage. Now, on this show, as we do with all our shows, we end by reading the section of the Declaration of Independence that is America's mission statement. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Prudence, indeed, will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes. And accordingly, all experience has shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer, while evils are sufferable, than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably the same object, evidences a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty, to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security. This is Melinda Pillsbury Foster coming to you from BBS Radio. God bless the journey that eventually brings us to freedom, and may God be with you every step of the way. Good night.